Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wiss. Let's take a ride.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg with the Brothers Wiss number 90. We have.
What?
A face we haven't seen in so long. My goodness. Goodness, Alex.
Hey, guys.
Hart, where do you live now?
I'm just outside of Portland, Oregon.
Oh, that's so nice. You'll always be Alex from Seattle in my heart.
All right.
All right. Also, we've got Mikey with us today. What's up, Mikey?
Hey, how's it going?
And then people say, we're doing great, bro. And then we've got Davey from, where are you from, Dave?
What's up, man? I'm from L.A.
From L.A. All right. Let's get the
vegetables
out of the way.
Yeah,
that's right, brother. That way you can get to the dessert. We've got a sponsor today is Pennytone. I'm not exactly sure who they are. No, I'm just kidding. That's Dave right there. Dave does Pennytone. So it's a hosted VoIP solution. Are you running any specials right now, Dave?
Yeah, actually, I was going to wait for next month, but whatever. It's close enough. Just anybody that sends a referral over gets the first month to them. And the customer gets the first month for free.
Booyah.
That's pretty awesome.
And so it's a completely hosted solution. So turnkey, the idea being you have a customer, a business customer, probably more than likely.
Of course.
Maybe they have multiple offices, maybe a single office, any of that works. You send them over to Dave. He's going to give them phones. He's going to facilitate the installation, all the configuration on the back end. He's going to help port their numbers. It's basically the easy button. You just smash the easy button, throw it over to Dave. They will get their first month free, and then you will get a nice check in the mail. Done and done, right? Easy peasy?
Yep. That's pretty much it. Yep.
I like it. So also, we have a new patron this week. Well, they were a patron before, but they kind of upgraded, which is baller. It's Lolly Singh. And you become a patron by going to patreon.com/brotherswisp. You go in there, you give us some money, and then we give you access to the private Slack. So we got a bunch of guys in there, really smart guys. Way smarter than me, definitely smarter than Mike, and no, it's great opinions.
Well, given the volume of questions that I ask, it's
triggered.
No, it's great discourse. Everybody's got a different viewpoint, a different opinion, but it is very metered and measured, and people are very respectful in there. I love it. I learn so much constantly from you guys, all of you. Nick said, surround yourself with smarter people than you. You know, be the dumbest guy in the room. And every time I pop into that chat, I am the dumbest guy in the room. So I have no problems there.
Oh, I think there's a competition for who's the dumbest. But I'll let you take the lead.
Why does everything have to be a competition with you, Dave? Fine, you can be the dumbest guy.
It's not a competition. Got me. You got me on that one. All right.
Got him. All right.
We're good.
So Mike asked the question, how can we be better? And we heard back from you guys, hey, we want better audio. So we are doing that. Today is our first test. And if the audio doesn't sound better, it's because our first test failed. We're using a product called Zencastr, Z-E-N-C-A-S-T-R. It's kind of interesting. It's a really simplified web interface. You send a link to people, they join in, and it just does local recording of audio and then dumps all that up to the cloud, as it were. God, I hate saying the word the cloud, but it throws it all up. Even has some additional tools that can kind of edit. I think it does leveling of audio and maybe some background noise removal, stuff like that. So we're going to see. Obviously, the next step for us was to do local recordings, but this actually makes it so easy. I don't have to go through the process of getting these guys to record with Audacity or Gold Wave or something like that and then upload to a Dropbox or anything like that. It kind of does all that magic for you, and it's surprisingly affordable.
Sure. Yeah. The thing that I like about it is that the other way, you have to listen to everybody's recordings and try to match it up, so that they all match, time sync.
Yeah, get them all synced.
Zencastr just does it.
Yeah.
When you're given, as the recorder, you're getting real time access to a mixer board, right?
Apparently there's even some sounds I can play in there, drums, dramatic piano. You want? Let's see. I don't know. It's apparently playing dramatic piano. I don't know if anybody can hear it or not. Let me stop that. There we go. Great. Yeah. So it's got weird live tools in there that I assume I will never actually use. So that's fine. I'm just excited about the local recording option that will upload. I mean, I'll still have to chop the beginning and the end off and kind of synchronize it with a video, but that's easy peasy compared to having to take all those individual audio streams and synchronize them all together. So I'm excited. Hopefully we'll get some better audio out of it. And if we have special guests, this interface is so easy for anybody to actually use, right? Just send them a link over. So that'll be cool. Looking forward to it. All right, Mikey, you got a bunch of stuff in here. Tell us about the feature request doc. What's the story on that?
Sure. So I made a Google Doc that is just a listing of links to different manufacturers' feature request systems. Because that's how we get what we want done. You know, going onto a forum, unless it's a feature request forum and complaining, or Facebook and complaining, only goes so far. Most vendors have an official make your suggestions here. And then most of those have voting mechanisms. Some of the vendors still just ignore it anyway. but for the vendors that don't, or, you know, just to make yourself feel like you did the right thing, go through there and do it regularly. You know, go through there once a month or once every few months and look and see if somebody added something new that's of interest to you. You know, I'll go through various vendors, you know, feature request systems, and I'm like, I didn't even know I wanted to do that. And now I do. Yes. Click. And so it's, you know, it's nice to keep track of that. So that document keeps track of all the systems that keep track of feature requests.
Watch the watchers. I like it. Yeah, you've got Ubiquiti in here, some Cambium, Mimosa, NetXMS, Libra, yada, yada, yada. There's a bunch of stuff in there. But that's great. We should probably add the email addresses too, right? Because some vendors, they're like, well, just send your feature request to this email address. So you can do that as well.
Yeah. And so actually I have this document set up so that anybody can type in suggestions, and then the Brothers Wisp Google account gets alerted saying, hey, somebody made a suggestion, and you can, you know, that's that way I don't have to know every feature request system out there. You guys can go paste links in, and then, you know, we'll just approve it. Yeah. It's added to the list.
And a lot of that's crowd support, right? So the more people that ask for a specific feature, the more likely it is to happen, or maybe the more expeditiously it will happen.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Expeditiously.
Yeah, there you go.
I like that word.
That's one of those $5 words. Is that it?
Expeditiously.
All right. So for any of you listeners, I'm sure, I mean, this was a minute ago, the Ubiquiti versus Cambium lawsuit that went on. I guess there was some official announcement recently. Uh-oh. On it.
Yeah. So on the 22nd, so that's 3 days ago as of this recording, May 22nd, 2019, the judge told Ubiquiti that they have until June 5th or 6th, I forget which date, to actually submit something that's straightforward and makes some sort of damage claim, or it's tossed out. I mean, it's tossed out now without prejudice, which means that Ubiquiti can file a new case. But if they don't file anything useful in the next 2 weeks, then the case is closed and Ubiquiti, well, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't, there's probably some other ways, but they cannot make the same claim again.
Interesting. So it's kind of like an auto close on a support ticket.
Yeah.
Without the reply option.
Yeah.
And yesterday, Ubiquiti, looks like they changed some lawyers again and made a request. Please give us an extension. Mm. And of course, Cambium's like, no, you've had...
If you need that long,
months and months and months,
if you need that long to state what is the damage, I'm just gonna throw a stone at it here and just say there is no damage.
So December 18th is the first time that the court had a filing in the record that was the judge is likely to dismiss. And so from December 18th until May 22nd, they were unable to make a straightforward claim as to how they were actually harmed. Because once you threw the GPL in there and stuff that they could no longer claim, took a lot of wind out of their sails. And apparently they have had a hard time making a useful case since then. So this whole thing should be wrapped up in the next 2 weeks.
That's tough. I mean, I think, at least in my thinking, at least early on, you know, it was you try and look at it logically. Why would they bring this case in there? Because I didn't, you know, talking to anybody, I didn't have anybody give me the impression that they thought Ubiquity was going to win this in some way, right? So maybe it was just kind of a scare tactic. Because I think from the perspective of, hey, let's give a few people pause about using the Cambium Elevate, right? Right. So it all comes down to Cambium started doing this Elevate product where you could take Ubiquity radios and load Cambium firmware on them, right, to elevate them. I'm doing air quotes here, people. You could elevate them. And so that's where Ubiquity had beef. But
that's such a great term for it.
it never really felt like they, at least in the initial filings, had presented anything that seemed really substantial. And so, I mean, I did hear some people say, you know, I'm kind of skeptical about using the Elevate stuff because I would be afraid something would happen. And then, you know, I mean, that's going to put a halt to all of this migration I'm doing. And, you know, so as far as FUD goes, it seemed like it worked, but.
Feel a lot like, oh, I've got an iPad and I want to jailbreak it. And then you're like kind of stuck in your own world of, I don't know. I can see how Ubiquity's like, come on, like you're trying to steal our products and make people use them and give a bad name to our original firmware.
Oh, yeah. I mean, putting myself in their shoes, I would be super pissed at them doing that. Yeah. And I would at least do something. I would fire some kind of shot across their bow.
I think a lot of the community resistance was because not only did Ubiquity sue Cambium, Ubiquity also sued a distributor and a WISP.
Yeah.
Mm. So that way they had three entities involved to then make it, I forget what the collusion or something like that. I don't remember what the.
But that does, if you're coming from a FUD perspective, right? Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. If they brought a lawsuit against a WISP, that's like, well, you know, hell, who's to say they're not going to do that to me, right? If I start doing it, you know what I mean? So, again, if you're
precedent.
If you're approaching it from that angle, that does make sense, right? To kind of sow some fear.
I have a simple question. I mean, if you own the product, right? You buy the product, you own it, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, isn't this kind of, tell me if I'm right or wrong here, isn't this the same kind of scenario that happened with, like, routers back in the day that you can flash with like DDWRT or Tomato OS or something like that? Is there any like similarities here?
Yes.
Well, it seems like the biggest difference between DDWRT and Jailbreak and whatever else is these are two companies that are out there to turn a profit on their products and services. And one company is saying, oh yeah, you know, we can just totally use somebody else's product. I don't know.
But what does it matter?
Because seems a little different.
Everybody's going to be making money off of it anyway. If Ubiquity is selling cheaper radios than Cambium, and you could just elevate the Ubiquity stuff, what's the big deal?
The whole idea of the Elevate stuff was it was a kind of an intermediary step to completely replace all the Cambium kit, right? So if you elevated them, you could change the access point to a Cambium AP so that the Ubiquity, you know, and then you could go out and slowly truck roll and replace all of those Ubiquity radios with Cambium stuff.
Yeah, but what if you didn't need to? What if you just like Ubiquity hardware because it's easier to get, because it's cheaper, whatever the case may be?
I think I might be crazy, but I think it was cheaper to go directly with the Cambium stuff than it would be to like buy a brand new Ubiquity, elevate it, and then throw it in your network. Is that right, Mike?
Yes, because they did sell the license for $20 or $30 to, and the license goes on the access point, to allow an elevated device. Because Cambium's not selling the client anymore, so there's a license. Well, except now, for every access point you buy, you get 15 free Elevate licenses.
Oh, snap. Is that right? I didn't know that.
So now they're not even, they're selling it, but, now the bulk of it is, you get 15 of them for free.
And tell me if I'm wrong. Don't those licenses too, aren't they kind of rolling? So if you elevate a radio and then you throw it away and replace it with a Cambium, that license kind of goes back to the AP?
Yes.
All right.
Nice. Kudos to Cambium for doing that. I think that's fantastic.
And it's a very savvy move.
And a lot of this is that, like, in a lot of the claims Ubiquiti was making, it was like, our special this, our special that. Except it's all commodity hardware with some, some little stuff added on the side, which apparently is useless because the Elevate radios are better than the Ubiquiti radios. And it's mostly commodity software. Just the user interface and the AirMax protocol, which Cambium's throwing away, is, is it everything is open source or purchased from somebody else that took a lot of wind out of their, this is our special stuff.
And it's not like Ubiquiti was, charging for a platform to continuously use the product or get upgrades or something, and then they're losing out on that money. You buy their equipment and you get free firmware upgrades, you get free, support in the forums and whatever else. So I could also see if Ubiquiti were charging for that and then they lost out on that revenue and they went to Cambium and said, hey, you're stealing our revenue by bypassing our, special support. I don't know. Yeah.
Sure.
Even then, it's at the discretion of the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I want to throw out my Ubiquiti radios today and replace them with Cambium, what's that any different than just upgrading them? If anything, you're on Ubiquiti hardware a little bit longer. Whatever. I don't know. I just think it sounds petty. It sounds like a bunch of lawyers over at Ubiquiti trying to justify their jobs.
Well, and and from the outside, it looks like it boils down to Ubiquiti was pissed that Cambium could make Ubiquiti gear work better than Ubiquiti could.
But and we see Ubiquiti that. You see that in so many industries. You see that in the car industry. Someone is doing some sort of a flash to make the car more efficient to do it better. I remember when the Prius, there was challenges of who can flash the Prius software in the car, firmware, whatever you might call it, the ECU, to get more miles per gallon. There was these competitions of how much you could get on a full tank. I don't think that's bad. I think that for all you guys out there that likes to talk about, capitalism? Well, this is capitalism, all right? So someone's coming out with a better product, making your product better. That's awesome.
Was Cambium actually claiming to make the product perform better, or were they just allowing somebody else's hardware to play well in their network?
It was just a migration path. That's all it ever was. I don't know. I never heard and I never read anywhere where Cambium was saying it's actually going to perform better once it's elevated. I did actually hear some people say that once they elevated the radios, they worked a little better. And this is unsubstantiated, but I've heard some people say in certain scenarios, the elevated Ubiquiti radios work better than the Cambium radios do. So I don't know.
Interesting.
It's interesting.
Lawyers justifying their job. That's what I say.
Well, I'm not going to fault them. If I was in their shoes, that was a shrewd move. They maybe slowed the tide a little bit, because you started hearing a lot about Elevate and it kind of slowed down a little bit, I think, from this. So I don't know. People say no advertising is bad advertising, right? But
why doesn't Ubiquiti come out with some sort of a upgrade to Cambium stuff?
Reverse Elevate?
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be the outcome of this case getting dropped.
Or better yet.
Hey, now we have precedent that it's okay to do this. Yeah. We're going to do it to you.
It's just going to be the word Elevate spelled backwards.
And now you don't have to buy licenses with our platform.
Ubiquiti could just make a better product.
How is Cambium?
Well, they could.
I've never used their products.
The The consensus of people that have used both is that the Cambium EPMP platform is better than the Ubiquiti AirMax platform in nearly every way.
And the EPMP is their economical series, right?
Correct.
So it's the kind of less expensive, using the virtually the same chipsets, right?
Yep, same chipsets. Mostly due to just Cambium has a better, you know, wireless protocol that they run on top of it. That's most of why it's better. But, you know, there's some other management type things. You know, Cambium's usually better, you know, more responsive to, you know, feature type requests. So when you ask them to add this, you know, option 82, it's there in a reasonable amount of time. Whereas so
they're running a proprietary wireless protocol.
Yeah. Yeah. It's their, you know, just like how AirMax was on
standards.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, which, you know, there's several companies doing, you know, Radwin's doing that. Alvarian used to do that. You know, a bunch of companies have done that, and some work better than others.
From what I've heard, did they do that.
Oh, I was going to say, did the EPMPs, do they have SFP on board?
The new EPMP 3000, which is an 802.11 AC Wave 2 4x4 Mu MIMO, does have an SFP port. It just started shipping a few months ago. And Ubiquiti, which we'll kind of get into this later, they don't have any SFP ports on any of their radios.
I think you need to mail them a box of SFPs.
I have mailed them SFPs. I have ran low, so if anybody out there has a box of bad SFPs, I will send you a call tag to send me a box of bad SFPs, because I do want to regularly mail these vendors SFPs.
You're such a dingus.
Wanting the SFP, though, maybe, you know, Cambium's not going to have a problem after a little bit. You know, they're not going to have any hardware to harvest from Ubiquiti. Everybody's going to want the Cambium hardware with the SFP in it.
Well, how do you power it? I mean, it's nice, but how do you power? You still have that power problem, right?
Sure, but then, you know, you don't have to plug the PoE into your router. Yeah. You know, yeah. You don't have to have all the data, you know, yeah. You know, all the, you know, interference and whatnot and on the Ethernet line.
You're also not limited by the 100 meter mark on your Ethernet.
Yeah.
I like the model of having DC power in, PoE power in, but being able to put the data on the SFP. You get rid of all the interference problems and everything else.
Especially on busy towers, right? It's a lot of crosstalk.
And if you're bringing glass into your routers or switches instead of copper that's out on a tower, you don't have to worry as much about frying equipment.
Yeah, that strike coming down. Or, you know, one radio getting fried and it coming down and hitting the piece of equipment and then going up and taking other stuff out, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of mitigates all that.
That just happened to one of my customers. You guys know I don't do wireless a lot. I mean, I'm not a wireless ISP, but I do a point-to-point for Mount Wilson Observatory up on the top of the San Gabriel Mountains. They had a lightning strike, and they had a Ubiquiti, and it just fried the switch, and it fried the AP. So I'm in town. I'm shopping for another, what do we get? We got Powerbeam M5s, the 620 millimeter dish. Maybe I'll just tell them, let's try Cambium. What do you think?
Sure.
Or should I elevate? Should I elevate the one on the far end?
I don't know. Does Ubiquiti have anything else coming out?
Well, so Ubiquiti does have their LTU product that has now hit the early access store.
Yeah, the beta store. How do you become part of the beta program? How does that work?
Just ask.
Huh.
Yeah, years ago I supplied.
Or the snarky response would be purchase any Ubiquiti product and you are automatically enrolled in the beta program.
Buzzing.
Don't ask how to get
Ubiquiti or Microtik.
Don't ask how to get into the long term branch because they don't have one. But no, that's just being more snarky than I intend. Mm-hmm. So they're.
But the LTU, didn't they announce two products?
Well, and so then it. They have the AirFiber 5X HD, which was the first product on the LTU platform. It's just point to point. They finally put in the beta store. They've got the LTU Rocket and the LTU LR something or other. It's the CPE.
Right.
This platform is, you know, leaving 802.11 aside. It's doing their own thing. And it's, you know, sort of like how Cambium has the EPMP, and then the, you know, PMP is their, you know, bread and butter high performance platform. Mm-hmm. This is supposed to be Ubiquiti's high performance platform.
So you're saying it's not standards based radio?
Nope, it's all their own stuff.
I thought AirFiber was their premium brand.
Well, it is, except
where does that fall?
Well, AirFiber is point to point, right? This is point to multi point, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and so the this new chip that they're working on, you know, it came out in a point to point version first, and now they are going to have it in multi point.
And the CPEs kind of look like little dishes with radomes on the top of them, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's it has a built in radome. But one disappointing thing is that in the announcement that they made in Vegas 3 or 4 years ago, I have on video them saying that there will be SFPs in the access points.
They're probably just talking to you.
Shutting them up.
And there's not.
By the way, can I just say something about how all these vendors have their own proprietary wireless protocol? One thing that Nick told me, Nick Arellano, is that 802.11 was never meant to go these long distances. So that's why every vendor has their own proprietary, you know, point-to-point, point-to-multi-point, long-distance wireless protocol, just because it was never meant to do that. So there are certain things that they have to modify about the protocols, and in so they've made it their own protocol, in a sense.
So how long until there's a long distance protocol that's standardized for everyone to use?
Oh, you got to ask the listeners.
LTE.
That's true.
LTE 5G.
Yeah.
Because back in the day it was WiMAX. You know there was A216D and E. One was for mobile, one was for fixed, and
everybody remembers what a smashing success WiMAX was, right?
Well, and the thing was is that like LTE is almost like the first LTEs were nearly the same thing as WiMAX. It's just it was a year later, so more people adopted it.
Wasn't WiMAX just a poor execution, poor timing sort of thing? I mean,
their
technology wasn't really that bad.
Yeah, well, from what I remember, when LTE was coming out, one of the vendors who made both WiMAX and LTE was saying they're almost the same. LTE is just the next logical progression of you take what you did in WiMAX, and then what's the next step? Well, that was LTE, and it was close enough behind where, you know, kind of how, you know, we're always trying to decide, you know, do you buy a product now or do you wait? And in that particular case, you know, Sprint and a few others bought now, and everybody else waited. So because everybody else waited, then that became the one that was successful, because, you know, if more people had bought up front, then WiMAX probably would have won simply because it was the one that was mass deployed.
Gotcha. Well, before we stick a fork and move on, do you know roughly what the ballpark street price is going to be on that LTU stuff?
Hard to say. The old school beta early access store was it was like half off, but I've heard more than once that that's not the case anymore, because people were just buying it in the store and then selling it for more. So I think they just started putting everything at near MSRP. So then it's, I don't know if it's more expensive than Air Max, but not significantly. And the access points are a heck of a lot cheaper than Cambium's, PMP 450 line. But it remains to be seen if they're as good.
Right. Fair enough. All right. So why are you so interested in UniFi certification? I heard you ask a couple of times about it, Mikey. Are you keen to get UniFi certified?
Well, I am now.
Oh, congrats.
Mostly because I've got a client that I support and they're doing managed services. And, the more, we have this many certified people on. So that was just adding one more to the box.
Why would that make you need to get a cert?
Well, so that then they could say
advertisement.
In their marketing efforts, it's not just, we have one guy certified. We have two guys that are certified.
Or sometimes answering RFPs, they'll ask about your employees and you could say we have X number of certified. You know what I mean? Like it just sounds
But he's not an employee. That's what baffles me.
Well, but then say, but they could say, we have this many people. We don't necessarily have to say on staff or as employees or.
Yeah, they could say we have X number of engineers. That doesn't necessarily mean they're, on the direct payroll. It's just somebody we farm stuff out to. That makes sense to me.
All right. Well, I guess we're like FedEx is all subcontractors. FedEx has
the ground. FedEx ground is.
Yeah, 40,000 drivers, not 40,000 employees. I don't know if the number is correct, but it's just you just use a different word to describe the person.
So where'd you get your certification?
Baltic.
This is you're right next to him.
But why I put it on there this time is the Ubiquiti has some work to do on their training and certification programs. and I'm not going to go too much because I've been meaning to send Jamie, who's the Ubiquiti training person, an email with what my problems with it are. Of course, as time goes on, I forget more and more of them. I passed. But there were a lot of questions that weren't very good.
have you ever taken any MikroTik certifications? I'm just curious. Because some of those questions get wild, too.
Other than my CCNA 15 some years ago, this is the only certification I've ever taken.
Okay. Yeah, because think about with the MikroTik stuff, you're getting questions submitted by people who speak every language that you can imagine, and then they'll get translated into your native language. So it's sometimes they can get kind of hairy.
Well, and so some of the questions, there were typos in the answer. So it's choose however many, channel sizes you can do. And it's like, well, one of these is not a real answer because it's not a real thing. But did you mean to do this, which is a real thing? How do I answer that question? Because technically that's not an option because it doesn't exist.
Well, that could be a trick question, but I get what you're saying. Yeah. You read the answers and you're like, are they trying to say this? And then you start playing this psych out game with yourself. By the way, Mike, I want to see you in a mohawk. I don't know why, but I need to see you in a mohawk. You got to do something to stop me from falling asleep when I listen to you. I mean, I love you. You got a ton of info, a lot of good info. And let me tell you, I think a mohawk would totally be awesome. See a guy with a mohawk and with your personality and the amount of knowledge you have, I think it would go perfect. What do you
think? I'll see what I can do for next time.
I think David has ever had. Very interesting.
Oh, no, this trust me, this is way more bizarre. But I think Hammond in a mohawk would really.
It's the most bizarre G-rated aside he's ever had.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I had.
Why
a
do you guys have
to pop up? I just couldn't say them.
So some of the questions were marketing questions.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't care that you're this world class. That's your opinion. That's not a fact. certify me on facts.
No. Like,
you know,
oh, please.
Every vendor,
you ever take a Cisco cert?
Every vendor. That's right. Every vendor writes history as per that vendor. So, so if you read a Cisco certification, they invented everything. They made everything. They just allow you to live in this world. It's you know what I mean. It's like that's every vendor. Every vendor wants you to be.
But you don't
an
have
advocate.
To let them do it. No, I mean, you know, give them
propaganda, bro. If they're gonna certify you, they want you buying their product as well.
Yeah, they want you bought in.
Okay, so but then on that tangent, that okay,
isn't the certification in and of itself like just totally immersing yourself in the vendor?
But
not always. Whatever.
But then, on buying the product, there were questions about product that you cannot purchase.
Oh,
nice.
And so it's like, why ask me about something that I can't even buy? And like, I go Googling for the answer because it was open Google.
To that, I ask you, why does Cisco still test over frame relay?
Right.
Good point.
But you
in Zimbabwe,
can purchase
still have
and
that.
Still use frame relay. You can purchase a frame relay card.
I don't know how.
Still do it.
Yeah, I guess. But none of my vendors will sell me a frame relay circuit. And I haven't touched frame relay in probably 15 years.
Oh, the 90s, bro.
But DSL. But you know, you cannot go out there and buy a UAP Outdoor 2.
Is that like some new product that's, or is it like old depreciated?
No, that's 802.11n Outdoor. You know, it's old. You cannot buy that.
They don't make it anymore.
So why test me on a product that I could not possibly purchase?
Well, it's a dated certification is what it sounds like.
Well, MikroTik isn't immune to that either. Sometimes they ask questions on RouterOS features that were pretty damn old. I haven't seen it recently, but they used to have those.
Yeah, they've gotten a lot better, MikroTik has.
Yeah.
It would be like, you know, MikroTik asking you, you know, how many antenna connectors are on a router board, 532?
That would be easy because how many connectors it has is in the model number, you twit.
Well,
you just buried yourself.
He makes
Move
a
on.
Good point.
Get wrecked.
Get a mohawk. Get a mohawk.
No. I think every certification platform is inherently flawed. You know, I mean, they've all got their problems. Some are worse than others for sure.
And what bugged me is that they had a survey on it before the test. So
wrong
I
wrong thing
so,
to give Mike is a
so
survey.
It was before the test.
How do you feel this test?
Of course
going
it is.
To go.
That's like Cisco used to give you the option to do a survey after you took the Pearson VUE test. And they wouldn't tell you your score until you completed the survey. So it was like, nope, skip. Give me my results right now.
Hey, like, before you take the MikroTik test, they ask for a survey on the instructors. And then after you're fair, you're like, let me go back to that. No, but I think every vendor does that. They want to get your honest opinion, unbiased your test result.
But then my feedback is on the test, not the course. I can't. You know,
how comfortable is the chair provided for this test?
You know, one thing that I'd like to say is that I wish a lot of these vendors could do their certifications through like a Pearson VUE testing center, right? Where you could just find your local one and then go and take it. Because I know MikroTik, you can't. Because I would have every certification you can imagine if I could. Because I've got a Pearson. I think there's three here in town. One is like 10 minutes from me. One is like 12 minutes from me. So it would make it so simple.
Oh, I get it. Just accessibility.
Yeah. It'd be easy for me to just zip on
and
down
it doesn't
there
have
and
to be,
knock it out.
It doesn't have to be either or. It's just in addition to offering it at your conference.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good idea, but didn't MikroTik try to do that with their MikroTik universities, which never went anywhere in America, at least?
You know, that thing is, that's where you introduce it into a college. You actually get a course in a college as opposed to just certification stuff.
I never understood that because MikroTik, I mean, you should be studying the principles and the protocols, not the product.
Well, if you Here's the trick. Like at a lot of technical Cisco's colleges course. And colleges like yeah. that, yeah, they'll have Cisco programs.
But hold on. That's because Cisco wrote the book. Like they were the first ones to actually get that into college.
Well,
come on.
Fair. A lot of protocols.
Cisco
and
wants
stuff.
You to think they wrote the book.
Well, a lot of technologies were developed by Cisco, right?
Yeah.
Or people they bought.
Or our spinoffs from.
Yeah. Or
oh, that was a good idea, sure. Cisco. How do we do the same kind of protocol without getting sued?
Yeah.
Ask Ubiquity. No, ask Cambium.
Yeah. So it makes a lot of sense why they would want to get them into the universities, because those kids come out, they know Cisco stuff. It's on their resume. It helps them get a job, right? If they come out knowing MikroTik, theoretically, they're going to want to utilize the tool that they already know a lot about.
But, well, now you're talking about marketing and market share, because if you have a Cisco cert, it has a lot more credibility than a MikroTik cert.
Yeah, nobody knows right? what a MikroTik certification is, like in the enterprise, really.
Yeah.
Well, but then, you know, that's, you know, in the first world, you know, if you go to the third world where they can't even afford to buy a used Cisco switch.
Yeah.
You know, knowing MikroTik is much more useful there.
Yeah.
Because they can't afford to buy Cisco, so.
I don't think Cisco wants to deal with those type of scenarios.
And I think the MikroTik Academy, I think that's really where it's taken off is, you know, overseas. You know,
Africa, Asia, yeah. South America.
All those other places, not necessarily here.
Well, Indonesia is their biggest market, yeah.
Well, and how much work is involved in getting certified in Cisco versus Ubiquity or MikroTik, right? Yeah. There's probably a lot more.
I've taken Cisco certs 1,000 years ago when they were actually hard.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they. I don't know. Cisco actively wants you to fail on those certifications.
It's part of how they get more credibility, right? If you actually had to work really hard to get it, then it's kind of an achievement that you can show everybody. And
yeah,
that's one way to put it.
Well, part of like the CCNA is they really, really beat home the fundamentals, you know, of networking mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So everything I know about networking really started from Network Plus and then the CCNA. So
yeah,
it worked for me.
When people call me up, because I'm a MikroTik trainer, when they call me up and say, oh, could you train a class? Could you do this, that? I'm like, well, do you have a CCNA? And if they say no, I'm like, you should probably take that first. You know, and that's really honestly what I tell them, because it's better to have a student that learned something that feel like they came out better than when they went in than a student that's frustrated because they don't understand the principles and the basics, which unfortunately MikroTik doesn't teach. So, but Cisco does. So whatever.
Well, I mean, it's impossible to take. I mean, that to much. Take a, oh, to okay. start at zero and to expect like a 3-day class to teach you fundamentals of networking, how to subnet, what a subnet is, what IP addressing is, and how it works. You know what I mean? It's like if you start at zero, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got to have something.
Is the MikroTik University, is that what they do there? Is they take you from zero to certified over a year or two?
I think, the academy, it's sort of...
If it's a college course, it has to be.
Well, from what I remember, it's a little bit loose.
I'm guessing they're adding it on to everything else they're already teaching, right?
Yeah. I think that's exactly it.
Here are all the basics. Now here's a product and platform that you can apply them on.
I think it's supposed to go hand in hand with the networking foundations, right? You build those foundations and then you can add on, hey, here's MikroTik. Here's all those things you learned. Here's where they fit in on this platform. And, oh, by the way, at the end of it, you're going to be ready to take this certification and you'll have your MTCNA.
Yeah.
I think Brian Horn up in Northern California, he's in Winters, California. He tried to start the first MikroTik University, and I don't think it panned out. Something with the college that wanted some requirement. I'm not sure. I can't really talk on his behalf, but it didn't pan out. And that was unfortunate because I thought that would have been great. I would have loved to see a MikroTik University in America.
Yeah, I think it's called especially Academy. You guys keep saying University. Academy, I think it's Academy.
All right, I'm thinking of Trump.
No, the MikroTik Academy, I was thinking I would love to integrate it into like community colleges here, you know, in kind of our area. Or technical schools too. That makes a lot of sense as well.
Sure.
To kind of get them in those focused programs.
It's so affordable. I mean, there's no reason why anybody couldn't. I mean, if you want to learn any type of network engineering, I think the MikroTik is the best tool to start with. Because Cisco's expensive. What are you going to do? Go with Juniper? You're going to go to Brocade? No way. You can start with the MikroTik.
one of the great things with the MikroTik too is you get exposure to all of the different protocols
yep.
on any of the price level hardware.
Yeah.
You don't have to get on eBay and hunt around for some old Cisco 6500 series to get access to, you know, certain protocols. You buy a $40, $30 MikroTik device and you're able to mess around with MPLS. What else can you do that with?
Yeah.
Right after I got my Cisco cert, I was working at an ISP, and oh my God, I was like 20 years old. Holy shit, we're going back 22 years. And I wanted to get a Cisco router. This is before they had r1r2.com, which was like the first web-based Cisco CLI simulation out there. What's it called? Cybex had a Cisco router lab, and it came on like 10 CDs. It was ridiculous. But before that, I got a Cisco 2500. And I mean, this thing, honestly, I think some calculators have more power than this thing. But I learned as much as I could on them. I bought two of them, and they each cost me $200. I remember I had to save so much just to get those. And $200 for like a gazillion years ago, just because that's the word Cisco on it. And just to learn the CLI, you really couldn't do anything. I had to go out and buy CSU DSUs to get to connect two Ciscos together, because they had those wacky interfaces back then.
Yeah, I think I've got a 2500 in my lab right there.
Oh, come on, bring me back.
It's
Let
got
an
AUI interface. So it's such
well,
that
I
big
guess
serial.
On that note, too, with the MikroTik, you can grab the x86 or CHR and throw it on anything and have no hardware expense. I know you can do that with like Juniper and some of the others, but I don't know that Cisco has a full-fledged virtual environment that you can practice on, right?
Really?
Well, don't you have what is it called, GNS3, that you can spin up pretty much any network hardware?
So they give you all the features for Cisco?
It's specific models, specific router models. You get the iOS and you can spin it up, so you can't do everything in that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can do like XR code in that, but you might be able to of some sort or another. But yeah, like to your point, Alex, I've multiple times before, if I was doing a configuration for a customer, I would use VMware Player and I would turn on a couple of MikroTiks and I would do my configurations in there. And then, you know, once I got them complete, I would email them over to the customer. And so all right there on my laptop, never having to actually spin up a real piece of hardware. Now, having said that, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 MikroTiks over there in my lab, but they're all Haplites, right?
Who cares?
And so that you've got four Ethernet ports and you got a wireless card. You can Boom. Simulate pretty much anything you want in there. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I used to have a whole bunch of 450s. Like I bought a 450 for each tower I had in my network, so that then as I was trying to figure out how to do MPLS, that lab has been it would still be functional today, except I've eaten away at the lab as 450s die. So somewhere I would take one out of the lab, and well, I got seven of them here I'm not using. I'll also take that one. Eventually, I'm like, I don't have any 450s
left.
Yeah,
I used to have a bunch of 750s, but you remember that first generation where the caps would blow up? Eventually had them all just explode, and a bunch of them I replaced, but I just got tired of it and just chunked them all. And then Haplites, you know, with a wireless card, I like that too because I can really emulate like anything, and I can test anything. It's nice.
I don't know about you guys, but I've got a map that just sits in my laptop bag that I take everywhere.
Yeah.
Maps are good. I mean, low powered, but
but you get on an airplane, you plug it in USB, it's powered up, and then you can Ethernet and wireless right out of the same. It's crazy.
You got a map,
light. I love it when people tell me that, like on the airport, you're setting up a whole network on your little like tray table. What are you doing?
You're doing man-in-the-middle attacks. Duh. What else would you be doing?
It's like, I'm on an airplane. Let me destroy everything.
I've really thought about doing two different levels of wireless access for everyone on the plane. Like, oh, yeah, here's the free Wi-Fi, just enough to get them to the portal. If you want more, you can pay just $1 to get faster internet speeds.
Snap. Yeah. One time I was on a flight, and I had my laptop open and it was scanning, and I saw the airplane's controls network was protected by WEP. And I looked at the icon for Kali Linux on my laptop. I was like, dude, I could be in their web in 30 seconds right now.
You're going to have to edit that out.
No, dude. That was a little minute ago, and I was like, that is insane. I can't believe they had that. That's just like,
no wonder they.
That's like one time I got arrested for having an invalid driver's license, right? Because what? It was like a month and a half expired. So the dude arrested me. He was like, yeah, sorry, that's our policy. I was like, this sucks. Anyway, when I was sitting there, you know, and I was like getting booked, they just set me in there with the cops. And I was standing right next to a guy's gun. And I was thinking, man, I could just shoot all these dudes. I was like, what in the world?
Why are you saying that? Why are you saying this?
That's like when people stand on the precipice of a cliff. They think, man, I could just
jump. Of course we think that, but you don't say it out loud.
And so some guy's like, well, what'd you get arrested for? And I said, they caught me with a bunch of crack. And he goes, huh. And just kept doing paperwork. He didn't give a crap. I was like, what are you people doing? Is this Barney Fife? Are they going to pull the bullet out of his front pocket and put in his gun? And that was just, it was bizarre. I don't know. Maybe I just have a face people can trust. Maybe that's what it is. How did we get there? What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, WEP on the airplane. That was bananas. I can't believe they have that. But hopefully
I'm sure it's not for the airplane controls.
It said something like that.
That's when they were a lot more strict about having devices out at all during the flight, right?
That's strict.
It wasn't
we're using
WEP,
so nobody can have any laptops. Sorry,
I mean,
it was
within the last 7 years, so it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, that's pretty lame. Whatever. Why is Hammett turning red? Hammett, you're red today.
It's hot.
You have this complexion. you kind of look like that color. Whoa, hold on, wait.
All right, Mikey, how was Shinog?
Shinog was good. Nice. Shinog was good. I mean, I go mostly to talk to people.
Are you going to
like Nanog or something?
It sounds like you're going to like some Starbucks convention. Shinog.
Shinog.
Probably something different, right?
It's for
Shinog. Tell us about it.
It's a group for a bunch of shut-ins. They're all shy. A bunch of agoraphobics. The one time they go outside of you.
Are you kidding? Mike, what do you think of this product? And he'll talk to you for 10 hours.
Is that why Mike's all red? He went outside?
Yeah. He's been working in the fields.
I haven't been because all the fields are still wet. We're like a month behind planting. But anyway, yeah, so I go to the Shinogs mostly to find people to talk to.
Oh boy.
Makes sense. Are you going to give us
now? No one's going to go there anymore.
Well, no, because like most of the sessions are stuff that are way over my head. This person's talking about analogies between packet forwarding and like chemistry, and they're going way deep in chemistry. There's some PhD person, and it's like, there's just so many sessions that are just like, about Yang. I don't know anything about Yang, or there's just on and on and on and stuff. This is way over me. But I go to talk to just usually someone from peering from Facebook or Google is there, or someone from AWS is there. This time, Ethan Banks from Packet Pushers was there.
That's cool.
Talked to him briefly.
Did you get a selfie?
I didn't, because the guy that I was trying to find from Twitch like walked up as I was talking to Ethan. He's like, okay, so talk to Ethan for a little bit so I don't waste my opportunity, but cut it short so I can talk to the guy I'm trying to talk to.
It's Shinog. He didn't want a selfie.
It takes 2 seconds, Mike. You could have been a hero.
I guess the worst thing about the day is that I came home and my wife's car was broken, broke the axle on her car. So that was a pain in the ass. This was the ninth Shinog. I've been to, I think, since the third or fourth one all the way through. And they've got probably 300 people that go to these shows now.
It's getting bigger and bigger, huh?
Yeah. It was kind of...
Refresh my memory. What is Shinog all about?
So this is Chicago Network Operator Group, right? Is this actually a spinoff or a local version of Nanog, or is this its own thing?
It was, well, it just this guy and his friend just started putting the first one together. It was just like an afternoon at a bar,
huh,
of just people coming to talk about networking stuff. And then now 9 years later, it's, you know, sponsored by Arista and Juniper and Dell and Cisco and Extreme and all that stuff. And, you know, it's just a local, you know, version of Nanog. It was the first one, I believe, in the country. There's since a few others.
Yeah, I've heard.
We should start a convention.
So yeah, in another 10 episodes or so, are we gonna do Bronogs? Announcing Bronog One.
Bronog One. I love it.
Call it.
It what up? You know, we might get people to go to that too.
You even live?
You know, there's been people asking us about it.
That would actually be pretty cool.
Where would we even hold Bronog?
Depends on how long. Yeah, at the hog farm. Come on now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I bet Disher would give us some space over here, and ISP supplies. He'd probably let us hang out in his.
Oh, he would love it.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? He'd love it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He'd fly us in.
I'm sure he would. Well, I wouldn't have far to fly. It's like 10 minutes from my house. But yeah, he's got a lot of space over there. He'd probably let us use. So there you go.
Mm.
I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff to do around here. Just kidding. Not really. There's a lot of good stuff to eat, though. Let's hit some of the Slack stuff, because I really enjoy talking about some of the weird little stuff we do in Slack. So Dan was having Unify access points with wireless backhauls. So here's the premise. He's got Unify APs, and then he's got a wireless backhaul that shoots that back. I think he was saying he was doing Air Max on those dudes. And the Air Max was taking a little bit to come up, so the AP would boot, and then it wouldn't find the controller, and then it would basically just do fallback addressing to the 192.168.1.20, and then just would sit there. And they would have to go out and physically reboot these things to get them to come up right. And so Justin Miller had the easy suggestion of turning off uplink connectivity monitor under Unify settings. So apparently it will attempt to find other APs, right, that it can do that little uplink thing. So it'll try and piggyback through another AP, and then if it can't do that, then it sort of does its failover thing. So supposedly, if you turn off uplink connectivity monitor, it will not do some of that stuff, some of that activity, some of those behaviors, and will work right. Does that sound right for you, to you guys?
Do you think that's a problem with how the wireless backhauls were configured, that they were filtering out or proxying the traffic in a way that was causing it to do this?
I don't know. He said if you then go out there and just reboot the Unify AP, now that the Air Max like backhaul is up and working, it immediately picks up, works a treat. It's just the fact that it doesn't have, if it comes up and can't get connectivity and then goes back into the fallback condition, by the time the Air Max comes up, it's like too late and it never tries to reacquire, I guess.
Interesting. Okay.
So I thought that was an interesting one. So you guys stick that in your back pocket if you run into the same sort of thing. Something else I ran into, so I've been doing a lot more research. I found a really good guide. It's on my desktop, so I can't really minimize because all you guys will see all the trash on my desktop if I do that. But I'll put a link to it. It's a Cisco publication. I'm sure you guys are happy. Don't give me that look, Mike. It's all about IPv6, and it is somewhat Cisco specific, but it's really good. And so I learned that IPv6 doesn't do packet fragmentation, which is why ICMP path into you discovery is so important. Because in an IPv6 network, if a packet's too big, it's just going to drop that joker, send an ICMP back to the sending host and say, hey, you need to readjust your MTU. So I knew that was important. I knew that needed to be there. But for some reason, the connection of IPv6 doesn't do fragmentation wasn't there for me. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I did not know that. And I'm sure all of you
guys
knew that,
right? Nice little nugget to know, especially with VoIP, if I ever start doing it over IPv6.
So is that constantly doing MTU discovery even after the conversations established between endpoints? It must, because if the routing changes and your MTU changes from that,
I guess,
and you're not doing prepared for it.
Yeah, it would have to be. Well, I mean, I guess if it tries to readjust and can't forward traffic anymore, it'll drop and then have to do the readjustment. But how long would that conceivably take? I guess it depends on your latency, right? So say to the dropping router, it's 15 milliseconds. Your host should readjust. Mm-hmm. I mean, would it be able to actually readjust fast enough for a VoIP conversation to not really notice, you think?
Yeah, I mean, you're probably going to lose a few frames, but how many words are there in that many milliseconds, right?
20 milliseconds per packet or 30, but that's not much. So
just a quick hiccup and you'd be back in business?
You'd probably just hear a little blip, like a little something, and then it's back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
Something like
people,
that.
People overlook that all the time, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not consistent, then they don't bother.
Especially...
Actually, no, my customers will bother.
Well, no, I was going to say, in this day and age, if you just assume you're probably talking to somebody on a cell phone, you forgive all kinds of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you kidding me? I get calls all the time. Someone's on a cell phone in the mountains, under a hill, something, and they're like, your service has a problem. And I'm like, let me look at the logs. And then I look and see what number they called, which carrier it's with, and it's like T-Mobile. I'm like, dude, come on. So just because they know they could call me, they do it. Well, whatever. I don't care. I do the work.
All right. So somebody asked a question. It was, I've got a MikroTik router, not a switch, mind you, but a router. And they say, how do I limit the number of Macs that are allowed on a single interface? So I was doing a little looking. I know the CRS stuff, there is like a Mac limitation that you can set in there, right? Because it's a switch, and switches like Cisco's do port security. I mean, everybody really does it, right? Kind of the limit the number of Macs you can learn on there. Something else I thought was you could do a bridge filter, and if you knew the one Mac you wanted to allow, you could put that in there and drop everything else.
Yeah.
That's not really automatic, though.
That's
kind of a pain in the butt.
You're not setting a number there, though.
Right.
You're just doing ARP no reply or something.
Other than that, I couldn't think of another way to kind of limit. Somebody said...
Well, you can limit traffic on only known ARP addresses.
Right, but you'd still have to know what they are, right?
Yeah. You're saying just like any random person connect.
Yeah, his problem was on this particular network, he had somebody who was bridging their router at the house over, and so all the internal hosts were pulling IPs, and he's like, how do I fix that? But since
that's a common problem that you can solve in switching with other vendors.
Yeah,
but
switching.
I don't know if they have that in a non-CRS.
Yeah,
right.
I couldn't really come up with anything automatic. You know, anything automated that would.
You could script it, but that's not going to be fast enough, probably.
Yeah,
right?
Because
you're
the
only going to be able to run that once a second.
Really fast.
You could say, there's more than one ARP address on that interface, and disable it or something. Or you could discover the first ARP entry with a script, right? And then
have it create
switch,
a bridge
switch
filter.
Switch some settings after that.
You could maybe have a script, wait for the first
and
one,
let me ask
and then after
this.
The first one, add a bridge filter and just drop everything else.
Yeah, but like, I mean, this, what if
the wrong thing got the IP?
Yeah, I'm thinking like, how do you even know which MAC address is going to connect first? Like, is it the first for the connect? Like, how does this get decided?
Yeah, because even if you did have a script and, you know, it did do its job and then you help them rectify the problem, you still have to go in and touch the thing and clear the script out. And so it's a pain in the butt.
But
I couldn't think of a good automated way.
That's true of all the switching solutions. The first MAC address it sees is the only one that it's going to keep in the table.
Yeah, but like on Cisco with port security, like if you limit it to one MAC address, you can also have a timeout so that it'll purge that after what, like 5 minutes or 10 minutes or something like that, right? So.
But what I'm saying is you could build that into your script. You're saying, well, how would I know that it's the right device that got in into the table?
Yeah.
Same problem exists with Cisco or HP or so.
Well, and then actually, none of them are the right device because they shouldn't be more than one.
Yeah.
Right.
The best
behavior would be turn it off and then wait a little bit, have it turn back on, see if there's more than one. If there are, then turn it off again.
You could just have the script fire every 5 minutes and it will clear the bridge filter rules and then just let one thing be learned and then boom, add it back in. And then,
that
would work.
I'm thinking, what if you do a filter? You can't even do, could you do a filter by Mac vendor and only say only this vendor is allowed, or
put
that port into a
long and you'd want a white.
But you'd never know what kind of router or whatever, or maybe they're just plugging a laptop straight in, or
I think I would just script it and limit it to the first one.
What if you just limit the TTL to one?
Well, see,
this way, because if you're connecting another router there, it couldn't hop beyond another router.
Well, that's
over
what
there.
He wanted it to do. He wanted it to be a router so that all of the, you know, all of the PCs and laptops inside the house wouldn't actually get bridged through and pull DHCP off of his stuff. So that's what he wanted.
All right. I don't know.
So then prevent a TTL of one.
I don't know. That's a good trick. That's if anybody knows how to figure that out. That sounds nice.
Alex's solution.
I think Alex's idea is probably the best one.
Yeah, I think that's it. So you just asked Alex, where you been? Where you been all my life, Alex?
Oh, man.
Write a script.
There you go. So, all right, moving on. Danny, this is kind of an interesting one. Danny's trekking through the U.S. soon. He's a British dude, and he's going to be taking, I think he said, just tons of 4K video. I'm not sure if he's backpacking or what he's doing, but he's got a couple of big hard drives he's going to have. And so he's thinking, hey, I need to every now and then stop and purge all this information. I need to upload it back to my server at home. And we're trying to figure out a way for him to do that. So I was thinking if he will eventually give us an itinerary of where he's going to be, maybe we can try and source some WISPs or something like that near him. Somebody came up with the idea of universities, right? Maybe they could just go to the university computer lab or something like that and upload. I thought that was pretty cool.
Or the public library.
Yeah, but don't they limit you heavily on your bandwidth?
Some do, some don't.
Yeah. I don't know about I haven't been to a library in a million years, so I wouldn't have a clue there. But universities, I've had pretty good success with those.
What about if he's ever in LA, tell him to stop by. He could stop by the office and whatever. He could upload on my whopping 50 meg connect. Actually, I think it's 100 meg now.
Yeah.
But
yet,
4K video is pretty big.
I think he was looking for something like gig plus, because even gig would take him like all day.
Yeah, where he could.
We could go to my data center. We could go to my data center downtown LA, grab a bite, plug into the cabinet, and there he's got a gig upload.
Yeah,
for sure. All right, so here's kind of a noodler for you guys. This is more. You know how I like to close it out with kind of a thinking point. So this is something that occurred to me the other day. Maybe it was today. Maybe it was yesterday. It's neither here nor there. So when I first got on the internet back in like 95 or 96 or whatever it was, you know, and I was looking around at things, you know, as young men do, just looking at things, random things. I was thinking back then everybody had access and looked at the exact same internet, right? Like if you went to Yahoo or Lycos or whatever, and I typed in some search keyword, ostensibly it's going to return the exact same results you would in Washington State or in California or right? But nowadays, nobody's looking at the same internet anymore, right? Everybody who's using the Chrome browser, who's logged in with their Google account, your results are actually optimized individually for you, right? So it's based on your history. It's based on your proclivities, your age, your race, your nationality, all that stuff. They tailor your search results just for you. So it's almost...
Well, and even if you're not logged in or not using Chrome, things are still geocoded. So you're getting customized results. Yeah. And then the more you use that session, it's going to customize it more and more
based on your locale.
Without logging in.
Yeah, so I was just thinking, how weird is it now that none of us are looking at the same internet anymore? Like each of us are individually having a completely unique experience now. No longer is it kind of this, I don't know. It sort of broke my brain because it used to be almost like we were just this one big shared hive mind, you know, all accessing this thing. And now we were all these ants working in this big hive together. And now we're just all these little isolated individuals kind of doing our own little thing. I thought one is kind of Big Brotherish and sort of weird, you know that an engine that large, you know, a machine that big, just, you know, of Google scale, can customize and tailor stuff for all the individuals using it, but also just, I don't know, it seems almost like a loss of community. It sort of felt sad in a way.
It's more like, you know, even AirTimes, you know, back then, you know, you would have a forum,
the same static ad
or something.
On every, yeah,
it's just the same ad that everybody saw. It was just, you know, the ad was the same for everybody on a given site. And now, you know, any site you go to that's fed by Google AdWords or some other ad engine, they still know who you are, and they give you, you know, if you've
Sometimes it's a little scary what they show you.
Oh, yeah, Hammett, remember when I asked you, how do you find all these videos? And you're like, oh, it just showed up in my feed. And I'm like, I'm not even going to say what kind of video it was, okay? But Hammett likes to send me certain videos. Yeah,
it's about people with their feet in spaghetti. I don't know why he gets off on that, but that's his thing. But yeah, it's,
wait,
it's
how does this blog know what toilet paper I've been shopping for?
It's a,
I actually like the targeted advertising. You know what? It's like,
I do. Better. I do.
Yeah, I do
give
too,
me
yeah.
better stuff. You know,
what?
If you're going to advertise to me, at least make it something worthwhile.
Make it relevant.
I might learn something.
Some people get freaked out by that. I'm like, dude, at some point you're going to know what I want before I want it. And you're just going to send it to me. Bring it on. Just do it. Just give me the things.
You
want
to know something? What's even scarier is that the first conversation I ever had with my wife was over the phone. She was telling me about her book publishing. She wanted to publish a book. And then, you know, we're talking about stuff. And when we hung up, I started getting ads for book publishing. I shit you not. That was freaky. And I was just talking to her on the phone.
Did
dude.
You meet her over the internet or did you meet her in real life?
No, she found me on a dating site. And then, obviously, we met. But the first conversation before I ever met her, it was she was telling me about her book and how she wants to publish her book. And
wait,
then
you
I started
had a
getting
conversation grand. Before you met her.
Yeah.
Well,
is that how it goes?
Do you think the dating site was like cross-referencing, like selling your
right,
information
like they,
over
they
to the advertising?
And then, yeah.
Right, and so it saw
know,
her and had been tracking
I don't even
her.
Know how that's possible.
Because it could have been tracking her and known that she was like, maybe in her profile it said it's soon to be
or
author.
Or were you
or
looking
like
at her, right, and you were looking at her profile.
Yeah, there you go.
And they thought, see, he's interested in women that do book publishing.
There you go.
Possibly, I don't know. I mean, with the amount of statistical data and qualitative research
that
all
could have been
that
quick search you did how to pretend to be a book publisher to attract
yeah
women.
Exactly
yeah.
Hey, it worked.
Hilarious.
Cool.
Or maybe she was just screwing with you. Watch this.
That was weird, and I never got another book publishing ad ever. But I'll tell you, when I look at things on Amazon, because I'm a serial shopper. I'm the spender in the family. And, you know, I put things in my cart. I mean, not in my cart, in my lists. I have like 100 lists. And every time I go to a site, I'll see an ad for something that's in my list, obviously. I mean, Amazon's connected to everything and Google's connected to everything. Yeah. And I'm sure they're all sharing the data. But, yeah, I'll go to any site and I'll all of a sudden see bike wheels or a radio. So, yeah, and just imagine when AI comes out. I mean, really starts doing the advertising thing. That's going to
be
wild.
Well, that's like what Greg's saying, where, oh, yeah, here's that bike wheel that you wanted. You're like, wait, I never ordered that.
I got to think, I got to imagine that Amazon's going to eventually get to the point where they'll do this program where they'll just have an algorithm that's clever enough to know things you might like, and they'll just mail them to you. You want to keep it? You do. And then they charge you. If you don't, you get to mail it back in like a week. I can see them
Wouldn't
doing
it be
kind of
even
thing.
Crazier if, like, Amazon had an algorithm that was so advanced that you get something, you're like, I don't need this shit. And then a couple hours later, you're like, whoa, wait a minute, I need that thing.
Well, you said they're going to, like, catch your house on fire? So first they're going to send
yeah,
you a fire
like,
extinguisher?
Here's fire extinguisher. Yeah, like, why did they send us 12 fire extinguishers?
And then their drone
my roof is
drops
on fire.
Some napalm on your house. You're like, oh, my God, fire extinguisher. Yeah, it makes sense. They're engineering scenarios over there.
Your Alexa integrated toaster just starts heating. It just starts heating. It just starts heating.
Burn down your house.
Yeah.
Have you heard Amazon is selling houses?
Are they like tiny
houses? No, miniature houses for like $7,000, and there's some county in California that started allowing those things to actually be permanent residents. Yeah, it's freakish. Each house is like $7,000 and they sold out. Messed
That's
up.
That's a cheap house.
On a different note, there's camper vans that, you know, one of the things I want to do in my life, and we're going way off on a tangent, but I want to do, I definitely want to buy a camper, like a van conversion camper, so I could just tour America, not have to like fly and book and plan and just drive where you want, camp out there, move to another city, and just do it all over America.
That's what I said. I'm going to do the same thing one Walmart at a time. I'm just going to park it in Walmart parking lots from one place to another.
Yeah, that's
good. Are you saying you want to be the guy in a van down by the river?
By the river! Nah, I wouldn't live in it permanently. Some people do, but there's a huge... I don't know if you could call it an epidemic because it's not anything medical, but there's a big problem where I've been noticing tons of camper vans of all different sorts, some really expensive ones, some really rickety crap ones, and people are living in them, and they're just parking on the side and live there. It doesn't happen in my neighborhood, but when I'm driving by, I'm like, oh my God, that's a camper van. Yeah, it's just really weird.
But down by the river, that's where you're seeing
them. Well, we don't have rivers here, buddy. We got oceans.
All right.
But yeah, something like that. Hammett, Mohawk.
I'm gonna send you a link to a Grand Tour episode that they did on RVs.
RV is different year. From camper van, but yeah, I'd love to see it.
It's similar.
Nice.
All right, guys, we're about an hour and 15. You guys want to stick a fork in it?
Stick it
in there. All right. So let's put a bow on it. Davey, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how are they going to do that?
You can get me in the Slack channel. That's usually how people have been doing it. Otherwise, you can get me at david@pennytone.com or just go to pennytone.com, look at all my advertising, and then give me a call, buy something.
fair enough. Mikey, how are people going to get a hold of you?
I'll be at Nanog in a week and a half. So go there. Otherwise, don't.
Is that the one in DC?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Rock and roll. I think Miller's going to be there two weeks. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Punch that guy while you're there.
Not too far from him. It's actually right next to him.
Yeah. All right, Alex, if you were to want people to get a hold of you out on the internet, how would they go about that?
There's the patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. Sign up, give us some money, check me out.
Always be selling, bruh. All right. I'm Greg Soule. Greg@gregsoule.com is an email. You can go to my blog, which I occasionally post at. I used to say very rarely, but now I'm actually kind of getting back into it. Now that I'm having to remember things, that's usually when I start blogging, so I can remember them. It remembers for me. Let's see. We haven't done a 5 tips video or, you know, in the previous case, 7 tips, you know, whatever is cool. We haven't done one of those in a while. If you guys have anything you would want to share with the community, thoughts, ideas, methodologies, get a hold of me. Let's record something. Give back to the community. If you want to jump into the Slack where all of the good things happen, it's, as Alex said, patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. That's really the fastest way to get a hold of me because I answer that stuff pretty quick. And guys are going gangbusters in there. Most people answer questions before I ever even get to look at them. It's awesome because they're usually very much better. See, I can't even talk today. They're much. Yeah, man, my brain is broke at this point. It's been a long day. They're better at answering the things with the stuff. All right, guys, questions, comments, keep them coming. Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next time.
Start learning, lighting up the towers so people can start searching, shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes, we're loud and annoying, but we're informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.